Today is the 20th of April 2008 at the Temple Haidu. We begin the 5th Popular Buddhism course today. This course will have 10 lessons, and we're trying to go through them regularly. But be careful, because this course is quite hard to assimilate. Before we begin the lesson, we recite the name of the Buddha 3 times. Namo Bonasu Thikkhamo Niyapatna. Namo Bonasu Thikkhamo Niyapatna. Mo Bonasu Thikkhamo. This course is about the history of Buddhism and the Buddhist schools. So it's quite not really difficult, because this is just history. But you have to understand and to know about them. Because if you don't know about the history of Buddhism, how can you understand what was the spreading? In this course, we learn about the Buddhism in India, where everything began, and the Buddhism in China, in 2 lessons, because the history of Buddhism in China is very important for the whole new world. We're in China to learn them. And then the Buddhism in Vietnam in 2 lessons. Somehow you have to understand more about the Buddhism in Vietnam. Most of you don't know about it. And I tell you what, most grown-up don't even know about that also. So try to learn about them. Because the history of Buddhism in Vietnam lasts longer than 20 centuries. Sometimes we don't know about that because of all these wars, political reasons, and now you're not in Vietnam anymore. So it's hard for you to understand that, to grasp it. But I will try to explain to you and then point you where you can get more information. And then the movement to prevail Buddhism. Because like you see, some people thought that Buddhism was something like awkward or retrograding, old. It's not. See? We'll see it later. And then we learn about the 10 schools of Buddhism. That is, some people just sit down. Some people do something else. Some people just pray the name of Amitabha. So what's the difference? Why do they practice so differently? So we learn about this school of Buddhism. We have a talk about the Avatamsaka Sutra, the Lotus Sutra. So what are they? Then the 2 last lessons are about the Buddhist view of life and the Buddhist view of the world. How Buddhists view the world. How Buddhists view the life, the human life. Now we begin the first lesson, the history of Buddhism in India. Summary, introduction. History learning helps bringing out mistakes for correction. This then of history prevents further progress. That's something true. Because whoever ignores the past will have to suffer in the future. You already know that. So some people think that, well, I don't like to learn about history. Because these are old people. The history doesn't help me. But that's wrong. Because history means experience of older people. You learn about their experience, their mistakes mostly. So you can correct them and try to avoid them. Because if you don't know about that, you can repeat it. The same mistake, and that's dumb. So, this land of history prevents further progress, because we will make the same mistake then. It's like, nowadays you see, you guys, sit here and learn about Buddhism in English. Now, if we say something in English like this, with the big assembly, they might not understand at all. And they say, mình nói cái gì, tao không hiểu. But since, you're in America, you speak English. You think in English. It's better for you to understand English. And it's good too, because it helps spreading the Buddhism into the American world. We learned Buddhist history from India to China, then Vietnam, like we just said, right? Because the Buddhism started in India and then spread out. So we learned about these histories. Main subject. Appreciation of the founder Shakyamuni. This is easy, because you have learned about him before, right? You remember the first course? We learned about the history of Shakyamuni. You remember that? Probably you don't remember. But then you have learned about that. You know who Shakyamuni? Who the Buddha, right? He has parents, he has a wife, he has children. I mean, a child if you want to. And then he went out searching for enlightenment. And he got it. And he taught people. And then he died. That's quick, right? Basically, apparition of the founder Shakyamuni. India had worst caste system 2,500 years ago. Because some people ask, why did the Buddha Shakyamuni appear in India instead of weren't he born in Vietnam or in America or in Europe? Why was he Indian or now you know more Nepalese? So why was he born over there? Now we know that historically speaking, India at the time had the worst caste system in the world. That is, the society was not good, was very unequal, and people suffered. So the apparition of Shakyamuni aims to eradicate this inequality. The reason for it, first, bad social system and complex thought in India, two reasons. First, the bad social system. We just say that. The caste system. The caste system means that you were born in different castes and you stay in the caste. And they discriminate against you blatantly, squarely. The four main castes, you didn't learn about that, right? The Brahman, that is the priest system, the priest caste. All the Brahmans, you know, are priests. That is, you know, they just do one thing. To do the liturgy, to do the praying. It's like, you know, in Israel, you had the family of the Levi. They have a 12 family. Jewish people, Hebrew, they have a 12 families. And one of them is the Levi. The Levi are like the Brahman. They take care of the liturgy, of the praying. So the Brahman is like that. The Kshatriya means the warriors, or nowadays we say the king and the ruling caste. The ruling caste, because in the time, you know, whoever was stronger, you know, was the commander. If you have power, you become king. That's it. So the Kshatriya is the caste of these people, these powerful people, the king, the rulers. Vaishya means Vaisya, means the merchants, the well-to-do people, the people with money, with wealth, mostly the merchants at the time. The Sudra means people who work out of their hands, out of their labors, the laborers, including the people who work in the fields and all the people, the workers, but in the time there was no industry, so they just work at home. The tool, you know, something like some tool for the house or something. So they call them the Sudra. The Sudra is the lowest caste. And now there's also one outcast. Outcast means these people don't belong to any caste at all. We call them the Pariya. Pariya means like the slave. You can kill them. You can do anything toward them without worrying about anything. So the caste system was really bad at the time. There was no intermarriage. That is, if you belong to the king or queen family, to a royal family, you're not supposed to get married to a girl in another caste. And our caste, of course, no, are a slave. You can kill them. Large difference in benefits, of course. The second idea is the complex thought in India. There was hundreds of philosophical and religious schools at the time. Some people believe that the world was created by someone. Some people believe that the world was created by the sun. Some people believe that the world exists only in the light. And if darkness comes, you know, the world will die. They believe in that. Now, some people believe in metaphysical causes, like a Buddhist, like come back. Some people believe that death is the end. So So there were like hundreds of different schools of thought like this, different religions, different thoughts. So people who believe can believe in one thing, and then other people believe in other things. So that adds to the confusion of the thought in India. Now, Shakyamuni is the master of wisdom and compassion, two things, wisdom and compassion. Born 624 BC from King Suddhodana. You already know about Shakyamuni Buddha, right? He was born 624 BC, maybe before Christ, from King Suddhodana and Queen Mahamaya in Kapilavastu. You already know that. He was born at Lumbini. So some people think, well, he was prince. Why was he born in the palace instead? Because in the time, the custom means that whenever the woman become pregnant and have a child, she come to her family to give birth to the child. That was the custom at the time. So she came back to the Shakya clan. Because you remember, Shakya is the name of the family of Mahayamaya. That is the name of the mother of Shakyamuni Buddha. Shakyamuni Buddha family is Gotama. You understand what I mean, right? No? In the society nowadays, you know, usually we take the family name of the father. Unless, you know, you don't have father. Some people don't have father. So they take the name of the mother. That's no problem. But usually you have a family name. And in society, usually you take the name of the family name of the father. Now, in the time of the Buddha, the child, you know, will take the name of the mother also. Why? You remember we explained about that before? Because in the time, men have many wives. You know that, right? And a man, you know, who has many wives, everybody knows that he belongs to this guy. He is the father of these guys, of these children. But who's the mother? They don't know. So they put the name of the mother in. Like a Shakyamuni Buddha means he is the son of Suddhodana, they know. But he is also the son of Mahamaya. Because the King Suddhodana has many wives also. That is the reason whenever you recite the Heart Sutra, you say Shariputra. Remember that? Avalokiteshvara, doing deep Panyaparamita, you say Shariputra. What is Shariputra? Shariputra means the son of Mrs. Shari. Shari is the mother of Shariputra, not the father. See it? Because everybody knows his father. But whose mother is he? Whose mother was he born from? They don't know. So the name is like that. You see it? So the custom is different. Now we have to learn about that. So that is the reason why we learn about all these. You will learn something about history, you understand it. So Shakya is the name, the family name of the mother of Siddhartha. Gotama is the family name of the father of Siddhartha. So whenever the mother, Mahamaya, was pregnant and she's going into labor, she go back to Shakya clan to give birth. And she gave birth to him in the Lumbini garden. Nowadays, you know, this Lumbini garden still exists. And if you go to Nepal, to India, you know, you can visit it. So you see that in Kapilavastu at Lumbini. That's strange. Same thing, because Kapilavastu is the town of the father, and Lumbini belongs to the Shakya, that is mother. Prince Siddhartha had 32 good marks and 80 good signs, predicted to become Buddha, had good education. You already know that, right? When he was born, the father, King Suddhodana, brought him to the palace and then washed him and do things like this, anoint him, and then asked the, we call them like the Pakirs, or the people, the wise men at the time, seven of them go and try to predict them. It's like, you know, in Vietnam, you see, whenever you were born, probably, you know, your parents go and get some prediction for you from some people. Like, I say, boy, you see, is he, will he be good? Is he, was he born in good, under good star or something like that? seven of them. Asita, you know him the most. Asita predicted that either he will become Buddha or he will become a big king, a chakra king. But only Kodana predicted that he will become Buddha. Now, Kodana was one of these wise men. And later on, you know, when the Buddha Shakyamuni went out for the search for enlightenment, he went with the brother Kodana. You remember the five brothers. You go back to the first course and study it. When the Buddha got enlightened, he went from Bodhigaya back to Sarnath. Back to Sarnath, like a 200 kilometer by foot, to tell these five brothers about his fighting. That's the first sermon of the Buddha, the turning of the wheel. So people will understand, will ask, why did he walk by foot 200 kilometers just to say something to these guys? Are these guys this kind of important? Yes, because Kodana was the one who predicted that he would become Buddha. And then the Buddha Shakyamuni Gautama went with them and learned and tried to do the ascetic things, and then he couldn't find the enlightenment. You remember his story, right? So then he left him and went into under the pipala tree and sat down for 49 days and got enlightened. After enlightenment, he remembered about these people, so he walked by foot 200 kilometers back and said the first sermon, the turning wheel sermon, to these five people, headed by Kodana. So when he said it, he saw that Kodana has understood it, so he said, Anasi Kodana. In Vietnamese, they translate into A Nya Kiều Trình Như, mean Kodana has understood. So Siddhartha has 32 good marks and 80 good signs, predict to become Buddha, see? Had good education because the father tried to educate him really good, because he remember Asita said that, well, he can either become Buddha or a king. And he doesn't want him to become like a monk. He want him to succeed to him, to become another king. So he trying to give him all the joys, all the Game Boys like nowadays. Of course, there was no Game Boy. But nowadays, he give him all the toys, all the things he like. And then get a girl for him to marry. Married to Yasodhara, has son Rahula. At 29 years old, he ran away with different masters for 6 years. He tried to get enlightenment. Lastly, sat alone under the pipala tree for 7 weeks. We call them nowadays the Bodhi tree. Bodhi means enlightenment. You remember that? Bodhisattva. Like your Bodhisattva in training. Bodhisattva means the sentient beings who got a life. Bodhi means enlightenment. So pipala tree. The pipala tree is just regular tree. It's like a Lucas tree. But nowadays they call them the Bodhi tree because the Buddha got enlightened under the tree. Got enlightened. Then he taught and practiced for 45 years. Entered the Nirvana at 554 BC at Kushinagara. You know about that, right? He died. So this is the history of the Shakyamuni Buddha. You know him. Now the history of Buddhist propagation in India. So after the Buddha died, how did Buddhism spread out? First, of course, you know, it spread out all over India because he had disciple. The Buddha Shakyamuni, he has a disciple. And the disciple, you know, spread them. He's already dead. So the spreading out, he got many disciples. And the disciple has their disciple. Buddhism, the Sangha. The Sangha means the assembly of all these people. Ilash. And then, you know, they become like a spoil. Because they don't respect all the rules. They infect on the rules. It's like nowadays, like you guys, you know, become like a bodhisattva in training. And then we have the rule saying that every 2 weeks, you know, we have to recite the precepts. Some people come, some people, oh, I'm busy today. Some people, oh, next time. And they become lax and lax and lax. Until, you know, there are a lot of people. There are a lot of people who were not really monk, only monk by name. but they don't act, they didn't act like a monk anymore. So personal, after the death of the Buddha, they developed the Kaosins. You know the Kaosin. Kaosin means assembly of mostly of the top bananas. I mean nowadays call them the chief gather and then try to make rule. That is, you know, to define exactly what really is the Buddha teaching and how should the monk now act. First Kaosin is at Rajagrika, 4 months after Nirvana. Nirvana means the death of the Buddha, under Mahakasyapa. Mahakasyapa is the big monk, big disciple of the Buddha. You already know him, right? The Buddha has 10 big disciples. And the biggest one was Mahakasyapa. When the Buddha died, he said that, well, I transmitted the my seal to Mahakasyapa. So Mahakasyapa was like a successor to the Buddha, only 4 months after the Buddha's death. So in that, you know, they recite the teaching of the Buddha. Because you remember, 2,500 years ago, the writing did not exist regularly. That is only in some, like, in some place, like in a king palace or something. Because they couldn't afford that. Regular people, you know, they couldn't afford to write something or to have something to write on. So they have to learn by heart. That is the reason why nowadays, you know, we still say, using the word reciting. Reciting the precept. You can read them. You bring them out, you read them. But then we still say you recite them. Because in the time, no, they were not written down. Only one person will sit down and then recite it by heart. So other people listen to them and try to remember. Remember like that. So the at the first Kaosin, at Rajagrika, they codify the three baskets. That is the Sutra, the Shastra, and the Vinaya. Sutra means the teaching of the Buddha. The Shastra means the explanation of the other monks. And the Vinaya means the rules, the precepts. So they codify everything at the first Kaosin. And then 100 years later, there was the second Kaosin. Because now, you know, after 100 years, the monks, you know, start to act differently. Mainly, some monks, you know, start to keep money. In the time, you remember, 2,400 years ago, there was no paper money like we know nowadays, right? They used gold, they used like jewels or something, and they called them money. But there was no paper money like we know now. So some monks, you know, especially the one at Vaisali. Vaisali is a big town, which was one of the republic in India at the time. You remember, in the time of the Buddha, there was some republic in the world, including some in Greece, in Athens. But in India, most of the countries were ruled by kings, except the Vaisali and the Kushinagara. These two places, you know, were the republic. Because most of these people over there are the Lichavi. The Lichavi, they are well educated and they have a broader mind about freedom and everything. So they belong to a republic. And these monks, you know, in Vaisali, most of them, I mean not all of them, but most of them, whenever they go out and beg for alms, they expect people to give them money. The rule of the Buddha is that when monks, you know, get out for alms, they expect only to get food, only for a day. They are not supposed to save anything. But then some monks at Vaisali, they said, and they get out, and then some people don't have food ready yet, so they just put some gold or something for them. And they took it. That was infraction of the rule. But they didn't say that it was infraction. They like it. So the reason for the second Kaosin is to make a rule to see if really, you know, you have to adhere to all these 250 rules, the rule, the precept for the monks. So the idea was good, but then, you know, when the Kaosin was like, you know, convened, the monk from Vaisali formed their own Kaosin, and the monks, you know, from the other countries formed in Vaisali. they formed two different councils in two different places. So the one in Vajji formed the Mahasangika, Vajji Mahasangika, and they want to change the 10 precepts. The one in Vaisali want to keep the precepts. And this was the first schism in Buddhism, in India. That is a different school. Now they have like two churches. The one Maha mean big, Sangika mean assembly, the big assembly. And Stavita Virvada mean the Thuong Thua Bo, mean the one who sit up. You understand? You don't understand what mean sit up. But mostly these are the elders who stuck to the old rule. So they call them the... So you see, basically all of the monks, all of the school of Buddhism in India belong to the Stavita Virvada. And then they start to divide. And the first division is into the Mahasangika. All of them were, of course, small vehicle. Now, after that, 2 centuries after Nirvana, that is 100 years more later, under the order of the king of Ashoka. You know Ashoka? Ashoka is a big king, right? So he said that now, you cannot do that anymore, because Ashoka used not to be a Buddhist. He was really mean guy. And then, he changed, and then he respect all the religions until he met someone, Nigrodha monk. The monk Nigrodha taught him about the Buddha Dharma, and then now he adhered to the Buddha Dharma only. So he convened this third council in Pataliputra. And this is the first council where everything was recorded in writing. That is, during the two first councils, they recite only. They discuss, but then, the record was not put down in writing. But the third council, that is 200 years after the death of the Buddha and the Ashoka, this council was put down in writing, the record, really recorded down. And this council was convened from 1,000 of old monks, and codify back again on the teaching of the Buddhas. Because you see, when after they changed into two churches, some people from this church don't believe in the other guy saying. And some people in the other church don't believe in that, in the saying of the other guys too. So there was difference, and Ashoka wanted to codify them back again. They ask the elderly and try to dig out and then to recite everything and recodify it and record in writing. That's the third one. These are 3 councils who were recognized by all of the people, except for some scholars. Because some scholars say that, the first council, it was convened just 4 months after the death of the Buddha. They couldn't do that. The scholar, they just put some question, but they didn't have any proof to doubt about it. But basically, all Buddhists believe in these 3 first councils. Now, the fourth council, now since we belong to the big vehicle, we say Kashmir. But the fourth council for the Hinayana, the small vehicle people, they believe that the fourth council were convened in Sri Lanka, that is Ceylon. Now, we forget about that. Because Kashmir, Kashmir, right? Kashmir nowadays, is Muslim country. Kashmir now stays between India and Pakistan, West Pakistan. But in the time of Kanishka, that is in the time, it was Buddhist, and it was big Buddhist country, by order of the king Kanishka. Kanishka, there was 3 emperors, the Kanishka the first, Kanishka the second, and Kanishka the third. All of them, respect the Buddha. And in fact, they were the first one who make out the gold money with the picture and with the name of the Buddha on it. You see, nowadays they still have it because it was made of gold, and gold lasts forever. Gold lasts. Gold doesn't decay. So nowadays they still have this, and I have the picture of it. I put up on the website and on the magazine a long time before. You remember the picture of the Buddha with the name in Greek, Buddha. And in the reverse, the picture of the seal of Kanishka with the name Kanishka. Nowadays they still have it. So they have proof that Kanishka really exists at the time. See, because nowadays, whenever you go to this area, Kashmir, you see, all the Muslim, there was nothing Buddhist over there. So we say, oh, these people, they just invented, there was no Buddhism in Kashmir before. No, there was. But then, you know, you understand about Islam. Whenever they come somewhere, either you were converted or you were like, you understand. We'll talk about that later. So in Kashmir, 600 years after Nirvana, that is about the first century of our era, the first century, under Pasva and Vasumitra. Pasva was the 10th Indian patriarch. You know, after the death of the Buddha, the transmission come down, down, down. It's like, you know, transmission of anything. So the first one was Mahakasyapa. The second one was Ananda. You already know about that, right? And the fourth is until the 10th, which is the Pasva. So Pasva was one of the patriarch at the time. And this patriarch, you know, convened Kanishka to form the council. Kanishka lived at the time in Afghanistan, Kabul, Afghanistan. So Afghanistan, Kabul was also Buddhist. And you already know that, because you remember in Bamiyan, there was like big temple in the caves. The cave temple, and then they erected a big statue of Buddha, one of 50 meters, and the other one 35 meters. And they blew it up, the Taliban. Taliban blew them up. You remember that? And in the time of the UN, that is the United Nations, you know, was in arm with them. Because that was stupid. They were Muslim now. But their parents, their ancestors were Buddhist. Now what they destroy is they destroy their ancestral things, their history. Like you see, you are now American, but your ancestors were Vietnamese. So if you say, oh, Vietnam was stupid, Vietnam was dumb, Vietnam was a thief, Vietnam was... You insult your ancestor. They are stupid things. They are thieves. They are sin in any country in the world. So in Bamiyan, it was the same thing like this. So Kanishka lived at the time in Afghanistan. Nowadays we call them Afghanistan. At the time, there was no name of Afghanistan. Because remember, according to history, everything changed. Even like in Vietnam at the time, there was no Vietnam name. If you say Vietnam at the time, they don't know it. So Kanishka convened the council, the fourth council in Kashmir. In Kashmir, and it's also recorded in writing. And in fact, you know, they codify the, what they call by the Mahavibhasa. The Mahavibhasa is like a 200 volumes to explain about, mostly about the Shastra, about explanation of the Abhidharma. So you understand the history of Buddhist propagation in India, the four councils. Then there will be like a fifth council, sixth council and everything. Now there was division in the northern and southern Buddhism. Nowadays you hear about that. Mostly, you know, the northern Buddhism means that the Buddhism which is spread north of India, and southern Buddhism means south of India. Some people try to say that east of India, but that's not true. Because east of India includes China, Japan, Korea, Vietnam, and we don't believe to the southern school. The northern school, N, means north. They use the Sanskrit and Mahayana, and they belong to Mahayana. They use the Sanskrit according to this fourth council. After fourth council, you see that, by order of Kanishka and record in writing. So you remember in the time, usually everything was said in Pali, in Prakrit, truthfully in Prakrit. Prakrit was the language at the time in India. They used the Prakrit. And some people, some lay people, use the Pali. Pali is for like common people. It's like, any one of you understand Japanese? Or try to learn Japanese? No? So I cannot compare. But basically, it's like in Japanese. Have you watched this TV series, My Boss, My Hero? Oh, Uh-huh, that's cool, really cool. This guy, you know, will belong to like a third family. And then, you know, he was told by his father, go back to school because you're too stupid. So then, you know, after he owned, he come back to high school. He has to disguise the high school because his father was a big boss. So he bribed the people from the school, put him in school. And this is one funny TV series. What I mean, you see, that in Japanese, they have the kanji, the hiragana, the katakana, different kind of writings. Usually people, common people, use the hiragana or the katakana. Learn people use the kanji. Kanji is Chinese. Kanji means hantu, Chinese. So learn people use the kanji. Common people use the hiragana. That is, you know, if you are like an elementary school student, you use the hiragana to write. But when you learn more, you learn about kanji, and then you try to express yourself better with kanji. So in the time in India, it was about the same. That is, the Pali was the language of common people. It didn't have the grammar or the tonia, that is the way of expression of Sanskrit. Sanskrit was precious. They call them Devanagari nowadays. That is the language of the Deva, of the gods. Because Sanskrit was very precious language because it has very difficult grammar. And you can express it better. In fact, you know, people who use Sanskrit was like a venerate. Like people, you know, regard them high. People who use Pali were regarded low because it's like, you know, they just say something like a, mà đi chợ không hả? Con đi chợ, con ăn, con đói bụng, con ăn. You understand what I mean, right? The precious language and the common language. So, at the Kashmir, Kaushin, that is fourth Kashmir, King Kanishka decided that everything will be written from Prakrit into Sanskrit. So, the teaching of the Buddha started to be codified all in Sanskrit. So that is the reason why you say here Northern and Southern Buddhism, Sanskrit and Mahayana. Because in the time before that, they were written either mostly in Prakrit. Prakrit is also a language which is close to Sanskrit and Pali. A little bit more difficult than Pali, but not as precious, not as precise as Sanskrit. The monk in Southern school now use only Pali. That is for common people. Because according to the rule, to their precepts, they are not supposed to learn too much. Because if they learn too much, they got swollen head. I'm a doctor, I'm thinking like this. They get attached to the word. At the fourth council, everything, you know, we start to write in Sanskrit. So now, that explains. Nowadays, you know, when you, I have some documents from the Gilgit caves. You know, in India, near Kashmir, there's a cave, many caves, you understand. And in it, you know, they found some manuscript, old manuscript. They call them the Gilgit manuscript. In this Gilgit manuscript, they have five Lotus Sutras written in Prakrit. Now, if you look at them, they look exactly like Pali. And you know that Lotus Sutra is not a small vehicle, right? The Lotus Sutra, King Farquhar, we took here, like King Phổ-môn, you know, King Phổ-môn, Phật Bà Quan Âm, from Phổ-môn, when we, so that is the reason why you have to go Tụng Kinh, go Tụng Kinh, you learn something. So, see, because some people say that, well, Mahayana was something invented by the Chinese people. It was not taught by the Buddha, that was wrong, because in the Gilgit caves, they found all these sutras written in Pali. Incredible. Mahayana Sutra written in Pali. Because these were written down before the Council of Kashmir. So Sanskrit Mahayana is Northern school. Nowadays, on the Northern school, they belong to the Mahayana school and they use the Sanskrit. In the Southern school, they use the Pali. And they belong to Hinayana, that is small vehicle. You understand small and big vehicle, right? This is not a erogative term. Just something saying that, well, small vehicle means you take care of yourself. You get deliverance enlightenment for yourself first. Mahayana, big vehicle means you don't care about yourself. You take care of the enlightenment of every sentient being. So you see the history of Buddhist propagation in India. Now, the development of Mahayana in Hinayana, this is the hard part. But you have the lesson, you can read them later at home. Basically, originally, all Hinayanis, all belong to the small vehicle. You already know. Because only after the fourth, the Kashmir, Kaushin, that everything will be written in Sanskrit. But still, the teaching of the Buddha was in Mahayana also. Mahayana was later development. That is, you know, they say that. But nowadays, you know, we find out. Because you remember, this lesson was written down in 1955. By this month, 1955. And nowadays, we found out a lot of things. Like I just told you about the Gingit manuscript. I have it like 3 volumes like this. Quite expensive, $400 and something. Not too expensive, but they have recorded the 5 Lotus Sutra and many different sutras, also in Pali. And that's incredible, because these are Mahayanis. First transformation of Hinayanic sect from the second council difference in rule. Divine Hinayana, you remember that, right? In Vaisali and Vaisi. We just learned about it. Mahasanghika, around 380 BC, we call them in Vietnamese Đại Chúng Bộ, which divide further in 8 more sects. So the Mahasanghika, they divide first. Okay, historically speaking, whenever you learn about the division of Buddhism, you see, first, you know, all of the Buddhists, you know, belong to the style Theravada. That is Thượng Tọa Bộ, later on, you see, in here, after the number 9. You see, all of them belong to this. Because this is the, they say, the way of the elders. Because only the elders take care of that, right? And then they divide first, the first division is into what they call by Pugalavada. You don't see the Pugalavada here. Because they die out really quick. They sprout out, but they die out really quick. Because basically what Pugalavada school teach is there is a real soul. So Buddhists did believe in the soul at the time. But then this school died out really quick. So they don't remember about them anymore. But there was one big monk in Vietnam, you know, who made a thesis, a doctor thesis, about Pugalavada. And most of the scholars in the world, they try, you know, to when they try to find out about this school, they have to look at this thesis, because there were very, very little information about this school, Pugalavada. Like we just say, right? He just sprout out and then he died really quick. So then, you know, it spread, it go down into the two things, the Theravada and the Mahasanghika. Now, you don't see the Theravada here either. But Theravada has all these 11 schools, from Savastivada number 10 to number 20. They all sprout, you know, from the Theravada. The Mahasanghika sprout out into these first 9, 8, you see, including the Mahasanghika that make 9. So it sprout into the Ekka Vihara, that is Nhất Thuyết Bộ, and the Asoka. In Asoka, this school, you know, teaches everything really exists. You just learn about, you just understand what they think. Don't agree or disagree with them. Because, of course, you know, they disagree with them, a lot of them. See, because if, since, you know, they disagree, they sprout out all the schools. See? If they didn't disagree with them, you know, there will not be any other school at all, right? So, the Ekka Viharika think that everything, you know, sprout out from something. Then, of course, you know, all the teacher or the monk, you know, disagree with that, and they form the Lokottaravada, that is Svatthebo. That is the school we teach about. There was real thing, but most of these real things, you know, come from out of the world. We say now, you know, the world is out of the world, Svatthebo. Out of the world means that, you know, something we cannot see, something we cannot feel. The Kukutaka, the Bahusisvara, the Prayapriyata, all these, you know, are just the name of the place where the teacher invented these. not really, you know, explaining the what do they believe in. Okay, like Kaukutika. Kaukutika is the area where this teaching, you know, sprouted out. And then the later on also the Kaitika, Aparasaila, and Uttarasaila. All these, you know, belong on the also, you know, to the different places. They just took the name of the different places. Of course, you know, nowadays Mahasanghika, all these schools die out already. Okay, nobody belongs to this school anymore. Why? Because all these places, you know, are Muslim now. So Stavitavara, that is the first, the original things. It split out into 11 sects. Of course, you know, it goes, like I just told you, it goes into the Pugalavara, and then Pugalavara died really quick. So then they split out into Mahasanghika and Theravada. So the Theravada, is the continuity of the Stavitaravada. And Sarvastivada is big school. They all belong to the small school, to the small vehicle. Sarvastivada means everything really exists. It's like, you know, Ekavihara. But they belong to different school, to different church. Because the Ekavyaharika belong to the Mahasanghika, while the Sarvastivada belong to the Theravada. You understand what I mean? They think alike, but they don't associate with them because they belong to the church. First, you know, the first church now divided into the Theravada and the Mahasanghika. In the Mahasanghika, some people think that, well, everything really exists. Now in the Theravada, also some monks think that, well, yeah, everything really exists. But they form different church because they belong to different church. But basically the thing alike. And then this one will last very long. And in fact, you know, most of the teaching still exists nowadays. And they go into this. And this Haimavatara, Pasiputriya, Dhammotara, Badrayanana, Samitya, Sanarimakya, all of these. Except for the 20th, all these names belong to the teacher. Instead of the one in Mahasanghika, they use the name of the place for the school. In this, from the 11th to the 19th, they use the name of the teacher for the school. So they think differently, but that depends on the teacher. They teach something and then they get the name on it. The last one is the Sotarangika, King of Bo. Sutra, you know, Sutra means the teaching of the Buddha. Means that everything, you know, comes from the Sutra. They respect the Buddha. Now, in Vietnamese, we call them Giáo Tông. That is, you know, you learn about the Sutra, the teaching of the Buddha. So, development of Mahayana. Although the first teaching has Mahayanist elements, Mahayanist thought starts sprouting from 4th century BC, with. So you see that all these schools were Hinayana, very small vehicle. But there was Mahayanist thinking and even teaching of the Buddha already. Like we just say about the Gingin manuscript, the Lotus Sutra, you know, came from before the Christian era. That is very, very old. Before many of these schools and sects. See, and it was real Mahayana talking about the Quantum, the Quantum Bodhisattva, and everything. But it sprout out better with Asvaghosa. Asvaghosa was the one who wrote down this book, this treatise, about the promulgation of the Mahayana. And he was converted by the 10th patriarch Paswa, who convened the 4th council. You remember him, right? We just learned in here. He convened the 4th council in Kashmir. Paswa is him. Asvaghosa was a Brahman. He was Brahman, and then, you know, he was very proud. He argued really good, but when he argued with Paswa, he lost. So in the time, you know, he should have his head cut off. You remember in the time? That was like a dueling, you know, dueling. In the time of, in Europe at the time, some people, you know, who don't agree with them, with each other, and say that, okay, I will fight with you. And whoever killed him will be dead, right? Or just, you know, use the gun later. I shoot you, you shoot me. See who die. You know that? Dueling, right? You know dueling? So it's like that. But dueling, instead of killing like this, they just argue. And who lost, you know, we have the head cut off. So, but Pashwa say that, well, okay, I don't want your head to cut off. So you just be my disciple. So he was converted by the 10th patriarch and hampered by Kanishka, because you remember that was the time of the Kanishka. Then 1 century later, Nagarjuna, the 13th patriarch, is his big one, the long horn, Nagarjuna, developed further with disciple Nagabodhi, Longchi, and Deva, the 14th patriarch, Madhyamaka school, Chungluan. This is the idea of the Buddhism in the middle way. That explains better. That is, you know, not cling to this one, not cling to this one. Stay in the middle. In fourth century, that is later on, Asanga and Vasubandhu developed Yogacara school. That's a big school, which exists nowadays. And these people, Asanga and especially Vasubandhu, was very respected in Tibetan Buddhism. So development of Mahayana is spread out like that. Now the fall of Buddhism in India, 20 centuries after Buddha, his teaching almost disappeared from India. Nowadays, if you go to India, you see, most people over there were Hindu. Hinduism, you know, is Brahmanism, change. You don't have Brahmanism anymore in India. They call them Hinduism, mainly from three reasons. Why? Why did the Buddhism, you know, die out? First, Brahmanism, which adapt and assimilate Buddhism. First, adapt. Because at the time of the Buddha, you remember, they have a big caste, different caste, right? And the Brahman was really mean. They eat meat, they sacrifice the animals. They slaughter animals to pray to the gods. But nowadays, all the Brahman, you know, eat only vegetarian food. You don't see any slaughtering of the animal in India anymore. So then the people are not convinced, because see, the Brahman say that, well, since I'm a Buddhist, they go to Buddhism because Buddhism taught them this. So we just adopt that. So they come back. People come back to Brahmanism. Now they call them Hinduism. And second, assimilate Buddhism. Now they make the Buddha Shakyamuni the 13th god in their echelon. So they say that, well, go to Hinduism. That's good. Because whenever you pray to belong to Hinduism, you also pray to the Buddha. Don't worry. He belongs to one of us. He's one of us. So, you see, the two things. Adoption and assimilation. Before, the Buddha was outside. Now the Buddha become their god. Second, Islam, which destroyed monastery and Tiananmen. Islam was spread out Muslim religion, and when they went to Ananda, they destroyed everything. And they really killed monks. In fact, you know, in the Indian history, they tried to develop this story to make people, Indian people, not to hate Islam more, to avoid Islam. Because they say that, oh, be careful, you go with them, you know, they will kill you. Buddhists, of course, you know, by definition, Buddhists were pacifists. They're not supposed to fight back. And most Buddhists, you know, were killed by Muslims. And the third, the intrinsic region, the region from inside, decadence of the Sangha. Of course, the monks, you know, were not monks and really monks anymore. They hide their family, they have a wife, children, they get money and they get power. They get power because they say that, well, some powerful people, you know, become Buddhists. So then, if they are monks, you know, they can influence them. So decadence of the Sangha and lack of education and practice. First, education means that the teaching of the Buddha, they don't care about the teaching of the Buddha more than most. They just try to practice, to pray kumma, so they get money. And then they lack of practice also. Like the monk, you know, who came here, they practice every day. Every morning, they wake up early and they pray. But many monks, you know, don't do that anymore. And without practice, you cannot become good. So there were three reasons for the fall of Buddhism in India. Now, conclusion. The Buddha taught whatever was born will die. Whatever was built up will decay. Indian Buddhism, after 15th century of success, fell gradually into decay, like anything in this world controlled by the law of impermanence. We don't have any reason against that. But also with the law of impermanence, the Buddhism which died out in India has migrated to other places. First to East Asia, Sri Lanka, Myanmar, which is like Burma at the time, Thailand, Cambodia, including, you know, like Indonesia. You remember that? Indonesia used to be Buddhist. And China, and then you see that, Afghanistan, Iran. You know, Iran was Buddhist, not so. Today, you know, I will teach the grown-up people about this sutra, which was translated by Ansi Kao. Ansi Kao was a Persian, that is, Iranian monk, then to the whole world. So sometimes, you know, we think that, well, it died out in India, that's bad. But then, you know, since it spread out, it's good. That's the lesson we learn about the Buddhism in China. Now, cut that off. Nguyện đem công đức này hướng về khắp tất cả đệ tử và chúng sinh đều trọn thành Phật đạo.